I now recognize myself for 5 minutes for questions, and would note to my colleagues, with the kind of bright and insightful panels we have on both this and the next panel, we'll have some definite flexibility in the amount of time we're using. Mr. Vaughn, you're probably aware that a letter from a few of our national commodity groups was sent to the United States Senate yesterday. Are you a member of any of those groups?
Yes, sir, I am.
Not to put you on the spot, but just simply ask. The letter suggests that corn growers oppose any form of price protection. As a corn grower, do you agree with that perspective?
No. I'm a former president of that organization, and I'm a member of the Soybean Association, Farm Bureau member, and member of the wheat growers, and I do not agree with that statement that was made in there that they do not support a price-based protective system, and because that's what we need. That's what we need out here in the country. We have multi-year losses like we had in 1997 through 2005.
They seem to say or imply, says the phrase, that it would distort planning decisions and that a shallow loss revenue plan based on the last 5 years of revenue will not. You have any concerns with that statement?
Yes, I do. Isn't it true that basically the Farm Bill distorts planning in and of itself? I mean, what is the purpose of the Farm Bill? Is to keep farmers producing so that we don't have a situation where we create a huge surplus and then prices go to the bottom and we just, farmers can't get money to plant, and so they just have to stop for a year. How would that system work? I mean, it takes a year. We're not like an auto plant where we shut down for 3 or 4 weeks and let supply and demand come back into balance. It takes a year to grow a crop, and so we have to keep producing. We need price protection that enables us to, for lenders to keep lending, rural America to keep working, and our farmers to keep farming. So with that said, I would say all policies distort plantings to a certain extent, even crop insurance, the way it's structured. I mean, we have to set a stake in the ground and say, okay, this is the crop price, the guaranteed crop price for the year for crop insurance. But what if it changes 3 or 4 more times during the year?
Yeah.
Obviously, what that planting guarantee is for crop insurance has an influence on prices or on crop plantings. So even if crop insurance has distorting of plantings to some extent, the idea that revenue doesn't, I can't buy into that, because a farmer, if prices are low for all commodities, which they generally are all at the same time, and a farmer goes in and he looks at it and he says, okay, I grow corn and soybeans, I'm going to look at my revenue guarantee under my revenue plan, I'm going to look at my crop insurance guarantee, and I'm going to plant corn if it's the best one for under that system, or I'll plant soybeans if it's the best. And so even that revenue plan, that's where I disagree when they say that the revenue plan is not going to distort plantings to any extent at all. I think that's totally false.
Fair statement. Scott, why don't crop insurance and these revenue programs provide the adequate price protection you need from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, obviously, we set a base price in crop insurance usually in the fall months for us wheat producers, and then there's a harvest price set during the month of harvest, usually in the month of June, and you get the greater of those two. If, perchance, we get into those years of multi-year low prices and we have $3.5, $4.5 prices that are set for those target prices and base prices during those times, and you multiply that by your yield, your revenue guarantee is well below your break even. And the crop insurance, the way the crop insurance prices are set, if we get into years of multi-low prices, the revenue guarantees don't guarantee us a break even anymore. Where this year, it's just the opposite. Actually, with this year, we had some great prices set during the fall, and we have good revenue guarantees. But if we get in, and our guarantees are well above our break evens now, or they're going to provide us a profit anyway.
Exactly. You rightly point out that there are a great number of people out there who are misinformed in your testimony about the importance of direct payments. Can you give us an appreciation for the relevance of the direct payments to your operation, the direct payments that have been the foundation of the safety net of the last 3 farm bills?
Direct payments to my operation have amounted to anywhere between an $8 to an $11 per acre type of a payment. What can that do for us? What has it done for me on my farm? It's allowed me to replace equipment that needed to be replaced. It allowed me to buy some crop insurance, possibly buy up coverage on crop insurance. And I think one thing that we don't see in direct payments are all the dollars that are pumped into these rural economies through direct payments are spent locally. So we don't often talk about the support that it has been to our rural economies, but those dollars, in essence, are rural economic development as well.
And if my colleagues would indulge me, I'll continue. If you also expand, you know, there are some folks that if they have their way that would limit, put a pay limit of $40,000 on the portion of your premium that the government shares. How would that impact your ability to insure your crop, obtain loans from the banker, and how would it affect young farmers who are just starting out?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, the payment limits on crop insurance premiums probably would not directly affect my operation because I'm not large enough to get into those levels where that would, but I know many family-owned corporations that it would affect their ability to buy the level of crop insurance that they would desire. A young producer just starting out, would it level the playing field for them? I'm not sure. It probably wouldn't, but it does. Crop insurance does give us a bankable guarantee that when we go to the bank, we can say this is the amount of revenue that I'm going to get regardless of the price or the yield that happens to me.
And my farmers remind me, your neighbors, our fellow neighbors in Oklahoma, that all those records have to be in that loan portfolio file. That's not just the banker that wants it. It's the examiners who demand the banker
yes.
have that in the file. So it's critically important. Mr. Swanson, you talk about the importance of farm policy not influencing a producer's planning decisions. Given what you know about the effort last fall, in your judgment, would that policy have influenced your planning decisions if the farm bill had become the effort in the supercommittee had become the farm bill?
Well, I have to yield to what Mr. Vaughn said. I think all things influence your planning decisions, and it probably absolutely would. However, if we have, for instance, if we had price protection and it was equitable across the board, that should not influence your decision just because of that price protection. And so those things that were put forth, I think, influenced it probably in a minimal amount.
I guess to go straight to the point, the reference prices discussed in the 2000 Farm Bill effort, would that have addressed your concern about the need for price protection in periods of low prices?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, kind of a philosophical question. You mentioned that you've grown your operation and your testimony from 400 acres that your father farmed to 7,500 now. When you listen to the national dialogue, are you led to believe that that large farms are bad and the idea of the ideal farm is small, that the family-owned farm? Can you explain why you chose, if you listen to the national dialogue, that's what you believe based on what you hear. Can you explain your choice to expand, and could you sustain your family today on that 400 acres your father farmed in 1976? I know it's almost a silly question to ask, but it's relevant for the record.
No, there's no way that we could survive on the 400 acres my father had when we started. The reason I grow my farm is we pool assets. We pool machinery, we pool capital, we pool buying power for buying large volumes of seed, fertilizer, and everything else, and it's made the operation of our farm a lot cheaper per acre. My farm actually includes two other operators with me, my nephew and my daughter and husband, and they absolutely could not start without me helping them. And by pooling everything together, we have the opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. My time has expired, and I appreciate the indulgence of my colleagues.